Welcome to Alternative Realities, a podcast about the people, strategies, and stories driving the world of alternative investments. I'm Aaron Mulvihill, and my guest today is Aga Zmigrodzka, an executive director and equity research analyst focusing on energy and commodities at JP Morgan Asset Management. This is a special episode of Alternative Realities focused on oil and energy, given the ongoing conflict in Iran and the broader Middle East. The situation is quickly evolving as we record this episode on March 12th, and we're very fortunate to have Aga take some time out of her very busy schedule today to share her views on energy markets. In addition to the impacts on energy markets from the situation in Iran, we'll also discuss her longer-term outlook for oil, as well as how these events could change investors' perceptions of energy investments. It's a really timely discussion, so let's jump right into it. Aga, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
So before we get started, can you give our audience some background on yourself, your career, and what you do at JP Morgan Asset Management?
Of course. I'm equity research analyst at JP Morgan. I cover U.S. energy, large cap stocks as part of Core Group. I joined JP Morgan almost 5 years ago. And before that, I was on sell side, also as equity research analyst, covering midstream and gas utilities. So over 15 years of looking at energy more broadly, it's fascinating, always changing, but very happy again to be here.
Wonderful. And you're absolutely the right person to chat with as we try to figure out what's happening to energy markets with the situation in the Middle East right now. So there's obviously a lot of volatility. We always have volatility during geopolitical events, but we should also remind investors to have a long-term view. What do you think is the most important thing for investors to keep in mind right now?
I think it's important to be invested and to keep balanced portfolio. When you think about oil beta bet and gas beta, we try to make sure that we are well balanced, because the truth is the range of outcomes right now is very wide. Mm. When we think about our long-term process, how we pick stocks, we focus on high quality management teams with proven track record, strong balance sheets, like to call it fortress balance sheets. Mm-hmm. But also in terms of like upstream, we look at, you know, quality and duration of resource. What is the discipline on cost reduction, drilling efficiencies? So it's a broader picture of like picking the best companies that can outperform long term. But again, when we think about overall portfolio, just being more balanced in terms of like oil beta to navigate the volatility, because it's very hard to call a cycle. I don't think a lot of people expected the war in Iran to happen a month ago.
Yeah, but so picking the right companies, though, is absolutely essential in an up market or a down market.
Correct.
We should talk about pricing, though, because the oil price is probably the most visible price in America. Everybody's looking at it right now. We started the year at $56 or $57 a barrel. We've been in the 90s the last few days. What are the markets saying in terms of the forward outlook for oil prices?
I think we need to first say why the prices move higher. So heading into this year, the market was well supplied. OPEC accelerated production from spare capacity. So actually at the beginning of the year, a lot of people were worried about oversupply and oil prices coming down. And then we started to see an increased tension in the Middle East, and prices start to reflect that. So even before the war, there was already a geopolitical premium in this price. Right now, what we are seeing is, if you look at first month to 12th month future Brent oil price, you see that the premium, like the spread, is $25. So essentially tells you that there is a near-term premium in the market for the geopolitical volatility. And then the market assumes that it's very short-term and it's going to, and you know, last, maybe the Strait of Hormuz is close 1 to 2 months.
Okay.
Essentially, 2027 Brent price is still around $74. So again, what the market is telling us right now, what's priced in, is it's a short-term event. And then the question is like, what do we mean by short-term event? Because actually every week counts. What is driving higher price is the disruption of the Strait of Hormuz. If you look at how much oil is flowing through the Strait of Hormuz, it's roughly 20% of global flow and 5% of oil products. We don't have enough storage to, even with the releases from strategic petroleum reserves, like it's not enough to balance the market. The difference is just too big. So that's why everyone is looking at the timing. If it's just 1 month disruption, with releases of strategic petroleum reserves, rerouting of oil from the Strait, maybe on pipelines to Red Sea. Maybe we can, you know, the impact is going to be $15. If we're now talking about 2 months, then it's becoming much larger. So that's why prices are reflecting the risk and the unknown of the duration of this conflict. If you think about the demand destruction, we're now close to $100 per barrel. If we move materially high, like a little bit higher, like we'll start to see demand destruction. So yes, there is the upside risk. If the Strait of Hormuz stays closed for 2 months, 3 months, there is definitely an upside risk. And if the Strait is open tomorrow, actually the balances look pretty good. So the duration is key. Right now what's priced in, probably 1 to 2 months disruption.
Okay, so whether it's days or weeks or months disruption, that's a big impact.
Yes.
Going forward. So if we think about, we're in a very different situation now than we would have been, let's say, 15 or 20 years ago when the U.S. was much more dependent on oil. I think about the Iraq war, right? How has the situation changed? How does that sort of dependence on oil and our imports versus exports, how should we think about that in terms of different countries' pain tolerances with respect to the oil price?
Very important. Yes, U.S. is net exporter of oil and also refined products. So we are in a great position. But at the same time, U.S. consumers are going to feel that in higher gasoline prices, diesel prices, and jet fuel prices. That said, I think, again, heading into this conflict, U.S. gasoline storage was on above 5-year range. So we have time. The demand peak for gasoline during the year is during driving season. So if the conflict ends soon, I think consumers will be saved from the big disruption and big spikes. When I look globally, it looks materially different. There are countries like China used to import 40% of their oil imports from the Middle East. India, the same level of imports. Then you look at Japan and Korea, over 60% of their imports was from the Middle East. So these countries right now are really focused on making sure that they have enough supply for their refineries, their petrochemical complexes to run. We saw the release from strategic petroleum reserves, very helpful for Japan and Korea, especially. China was actually building inventories last year, so they have probably 3 to 4 months of imports in their storage that they can, you know, use oil from storage instead of imports. And China actually already announced that they're looking at limiting exports of products, so gasoline, diesel, and jet.
Okay.
And then in India, we already started to see some, you know, calls to rationalize how people are using LPG oil. So definitely different, you know, impact for countries depending on their oil independence.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point to keep in mind. We're in a different position in the United States as an exporter than some of the other parts of the world that are still very reliant on imported oil, particularly from the Middle East. If we think about the longer term view on oil, you mentioned coming into the year, you know, prices were in kind of the mid-50s and they were actually headed to the downside. What's the bigger commodity cycle? And I'm thinking here about the shift to renewables and some of these other things that are impacting long-term demand for oil.
In the near term, with oil prices closer to $60, we're expecting demand to be roughly 1 million barrels per day. So that's 1% year-over-year growth in total oil, but also NGL demand. So it's all liquids demand was 1% growth. Now, with the big disruption in price, it comes to question, right? You have, you know, lower demand because of the disruption, but also if we look back at what happened after the war in Ukraine, different countries start to have maybe strategic rationale to reduce their reliance on oil. So China, for example, accelerated electric vehicles. They accelerated liquefied natural gas trucking to focus more on power, where they can always substitute with coal or natural gas,
right,
and away from oil. So already their oil demand will start to flatten despite the growth in the economy. So that's a bigger question, because we have, over the past 5 years, now we have two big disruptions in the market and two big spikes. And the countries that, as we talked about, are dependent on oil imports may decide for their, you know, well-being of their citizens and their economies, they can try to make sure that they reduce that reliance. So that's, I think, something that we continue to monitor and try to make sure we understand, like, how these spikes are impacting long-term demand. And of course, you're right, beyond 2030, we will start to see decline. And I try to be more careful in terms of, like, how we frame it. I think the globe around, like, people around the globe are still going to consume oil. Like, yes, in the United States, in Europe especially, we see declines in demand for gasoline and diesel. But globally, there are developing countries that still you see the increase. Like in India, the demand continues to grow. So I think it really depends on different countries. That's why it's hard for me to say, yes, from 2030, the demand is going off the cliff because of renewables or, you know, electric vehicles. I think it's going to be more gradual. And depending on the price, the lower oil price actually is going to incentivize demand long term. So again, hard to predict the future, but I'm not in the camp that we're going to see a massive, you know, demand destruction in 2030s because of energy transition. I think it will be more gradual and it will take time.
Yeah. And another factor, of course, is AI and data centers and the demand for energy right now to create electricity. Has that shifted the calculus in terms of requirements for gas going forward?
Yes, definitely versus a few years ago. Now our outlook for U.S. natural gas demand has accelerated. We see more demand coming, again, not just from power. Actually, in the United States, the bigger driver is LNG exports, so liquefied natural gas exports, because it's not just U.S. that wants to add data centers. It's a global phenomenon. And so we'll see more power demand globally. So definitely it is a factor, and gas demand growth is going to be larger than for oil, closer to 2-3% versus 1% for oil in the near term. So definitely gas is a more interesting story fundamentally long term versus oil.
Okay. And to talk about another fraction of oil that's potentially impacted downstream, and you've mentioned this when we had conversations, is jet fuel. Can you explain what's happening with jet fuel and how does that impact, you know, downstream consumers?
Of course. So when the war started, jet fuel prices spiked to $200 per barrel, up from $90 before the war. What is happening there is distillate inventories, so diesel and jet fuel inventories heading into the war, were actually below normal in both U.S. And Asia, in Singapore. So when you look at the flow of jet fuel, roughly 40% of European jet fuel is imported from the Middle East. And out of the sudden, you don't have access to that product. Airlines typically store a few weeks of product. So very quickly, you look at shortages of jet fuel. That's why we see a big spike. And then when I look at who is a big producer of jet fuel, for example, Korea, one of the largest jet fuel producers, we talked about it, they import a lot of oil from Middle East. Right now, that availability of oil is in question. So people are wondering, do they have to cut operating rates at the refineries, limiting the supply? Thankfully, Korea is part of the group that is going to release oil from their strategic petroleum reserves. But definitely a market to watch because it's much smaller, the oil, so people maybe not spending so much time on it. Yeah. But, you know, under the surface, this disruption is much bigger. It's not just oil.
Yeah, you don't see the price at the gas pump, but next time you go to book an airline ticket, you might notice.
Exactly.
So, zooming out now, how do you think the recent crisis and the events in Iran and Venezuela, because we've had a lot of oil in the news recently, how has the perception of energy investments changed, do you think, given these recent events?
I think in the past, people could avoid energy and just don't own it. Now it's becoming more clear over the past 5 years that it should be part of the portfolio. And, you know, when you look at the earnings from the energy companies as a percent of total S&P 500, they're actually higher than the weighting in the index. Like, people are not fully valuing the earnings. And especially when you look at the energy companies at $75 oil. Because yes, now we're in this outsized event. But if you go back and say, okay, probably closer to fair value oil price long term to incentivize production growth, it's closer to $70-$75 per barrel, then these companies, at least in the US, a lot of them generate double-digit free cash flow. And because of the, you know, capital discipline that they have now versus a decade ago, a lot of that cash is going directly to shareholders for dividends or buybacks, which provides a better investment. That's why I feel like it's worth to take a look at energy companies. Again, always remember it's a cyclical business. Right. So now we are in this event that, yes, it's going to fade. Like we're going to, the prices will come down over time. But I think it's important as people think about capital allocation and like their portfolios to consider having energy there because of these like cyclical events that are very hard to predict. But they happen, it seems like, more and more often.
It certainly seems so. Well, Agat, thank you very much for taking time out of your really busy schedule this week to come speak with us and share your insights.
Again, very happy to be here. Thank you so much, Aaron.
That was Agash Migrodzka, equity research analyst at JP Morgan Asset Management. To all our viewers and listeners, thank you very much for listening to the Alternative Realities podcast. You can download our first quarter 2026 guide to alternatives on the JP Morgan Asset Management website at jpmorgan.com/GTA. And if you've not already done so, please subscribe to Alternative Realities on your favorite podcasting platform.